There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, 1207 FM Talk 106.5, and it is Midday Mobile on this Thursday, the Little Friday edition of the show, live local talk over the next couple of hours. Glad you're along, and lots to do on today's show, and let's kind of, we'll reverse engineer it. In other words, we'll go to the end of the list and work back. The voice you hear there in the show open, right there at the beginning of the show open, that is Mobile City Councilwoman Jeannie Gregory. She's going to join us to talk about a whole bunch. Diagnosis of cancer, fighting through cancer, and what she wants us to do as a community to help out other people that are fighting cancer. She'll join us at about 1:30 to talk more about that. Also, my buddy James Patterson, Alabama Consumer Law, joins us at 1 o'clock. Remember all the changes they were going to make after the Equifax breach? Remember that? Well, they had hearings on it last month. We'll talk about that with them. And also, yeah, I know right now probably the odds are, as I'm talking to you, maybe 15 to 25% of y'all's phones are ringing with some number you don't know, right? You're getting a robocall on your smartphone. What's being done about that? They have talked about it in Washington. What about a do not call list for your cell phone? And how do you enforce that? Because, I mean, got people calling from all places on the planet. They don't care if there's a law or not. How can you use technology? I know Dalton's talked about in the past, and that's one of the things we'll talk about with James Patterson when he joins us coming up at 1 o'clock. And at the end of this hour, Scott Bannon, Director of Alabama Marine Resources, is going to join us to talk about, if you go to our Facebook page, and I think I just, put it out on the Twitter feed as well, and I saw where Senator Richard Shelby had tweeted about this as well. Basically, it seems like a couple things, that they have accepted the temporary plan states like Alabama were using to do state management of red snapper fishing, and added a few other things into this mix. So it's what had come out from the Gulf Council, and we'll talk about that, kind of get the real-world implications of that on us when we talk in just about 30 minutes with Scott Bannon from Alabama Marine Resources. All right, so that's all on the list. And then subject number one here, and if we get our guest on here soon, we'll talk more about it with Cam Ward, State Senator. But I want to get into what came out yesterday with the Department of Justice report here, DOJ report on the state of Alabama prisons. Now, this will be a lot of people speaking breathlessly about this, that they didn't know this was coming. Of course, if you listen to FM Talk 106.5 over the years, we've been talking about this a whole bunch, because there was always this chance that if Alabama didn't turn around some problems in the prison system, we could go under federal receivership. And I've heard a lot of people say, well, the heck with it, just let them take it. Okay, using the example of California, when the feds took over their prison system, not only did the state of California end up having to spend the money to do the the extensions to their prisons, do a handful of things to their prisons, the taxpayers had to pay for that. They also were directed by the feds in the meantime to open up, this may be figurative, but open up the jail cells and let people out. They had to reduce the prison population, even if it did not fit with the correctional goals of the state of California. Feds came in. They took over. They made them do that. Well, Alabama is in a similar situation right now. At a judge's ruling, we were in violation. We were given some time to get things fixed. And then now you have a DOJ Justice Department report on Alabama's prison system. Says that there have been violations of the Constitution by failing to protect inmates from violence and sexual abuse. And a big article out today as well, not only in local publications and on with local TV stations, the USA Today has a story up today. Listen to this. Prison inmates, a story from Kevin Johnson and Christine Phillips with USA Today, said prison inmates in Alabama are routinely subjected to horrifying violence and sexual abuse within a broken system where people are murdered on a regular basis, according to a Justice Department review. Federal investigators who spent more than 2 years scrutinizing the prisons in the state, in a state that incarcerates more people per capita than any other, found illegal drugs and weapons were rampant, cell blocks were overcrowded and dilapidated, and few poorly trained officers on duty appeared powerless to establish any semblance of control. Wow, that's a pretty strong first couple paragraphs there. And it goes on to say, in three cases, investigators said prison officials overlooked apparent murders, ascribing the deaths to natural causes, even when prisoners had been stabbed. I guess you want to go way out there and say that's a natural cause because another creature did that. But there's even when prisoners had been stabbed, they called them natural causes. They said the guards turned a blind eye to inmates who were raped, and that officials came to accept violence and sexual assaults among inmates as, quote, a normal course of business, end quote. Going on in the story from USA Today, in 1 week in 2017, at least two inmates died, one from a stabbing, the other from a drug overdose, and others were beaten and sexually assaulted in daily clashes across 13 Alabama prisons that house 16,000 inmates. They go on to say conditions in the state prisons were so bad that the Justice Department concluded they probably violated the Constitution's prohibition on cruel and unusual punishment. All right, so that is the big one. That's what they're working off of here. Are we in violation in Alabama? Are we in violation of the Constitution? And therefore, are we open to having ourselves taken over by the feds? This is goes on in the story on down here. It says 3 days before federal investigators arrived in Alabama to conduct their first prison inspection in 2017. Now, remember, we had this issue. We knew this was an issue before 2017 in the state. I know that I've been talking to State Senator Cam Ward for 4 or 5 years about this. It said an inmate had been stabbed to death by two other prisoners within a housing unit designated for problem inmates known as the Hot Bay. That's in quotes. Two prisoners stood watch for approaching officers while the victim screamed for help, according to Justice Department investigators. When another inmate attempted to intervene, he too was stabbed. An officer appeared after other prisoners pounded on the unit's locked doors, but the response came too late. The officer, quote, found a prisoner lying on the floor, bleeding from his chest, end quote, according to the report. The prisoner eventually bled to death. One Hot Bay resident told us that he could still hear the prisoner's screams in his sleep, end quote. So it goes down. It's a lengthy article from USA Today, but it talks about the issues facing prisons in the state. And now here's, and one of the things, and Dalton pointed this out earlier, listen to this, on down in the story, it'll have a subtitle, Drugs, Shanks, and Rape. Says there are so few officers, the report found, that weapons and drugs are easily obtained and trafficked throughout the system. In one particularly violent housing unit, Bibb Correctional Facility, a captain estimated that up to 200 prisoners out of the 1,900 inmates probably possessed homemade knives known as shanks. 200 out of the 1,900 were armed. So you hear all this, and I hear people will say right now, they'll say, well, who cares? Who cares? Their prisoners are in there. They're doing hard time. But the issue is here, number one, are there people that aren't hardened criminals in amongst them? And number two, though, the bigger question for all of us here in Alabama, if the feds come in and take over the Alabama prison system, it is going to cost us a bunch of money, and we will be forced to let prisoners out just to alleviate the overcrowding, not by who served their sentence, who's reformed. They're just going to say, let them out. I know this is not nearly as popular as lotteries for schools, but we're facing a real issue here. What are we going to do about it? We'll get back to it next, right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. And I mentioned the report that came out yesterday from the DOJ and read through So one of the stories out there is not even local. I mean, USA Today focusing on this DOJ report about prisons here in Alabama. And a man that's been talking about this with me for years and years and years, and he's been trying to figure out what to do here as part of the task force for reforming Alabama prisons, State Senator Cam Ward joining us now. Thanks for your time, Cam.
Thank you for having me, Sean.
You and I have had this conversation many times. Many times, and now here we are back again with a headline that's leading a national newspaper and a real scathing report on prisons in our state.
Yeah, I mean, this is we've been talking about this for a while, and I've been trying to send some warning signals that if we don't do something, we're really going to find ourselves in a financial jam that we won't be able to get ourselves out of, not to mention the potential for a mass release of inmates, which would be terrible for public safety.
That's what people need to understand. This is not a discussion of, oh, there's some bleeding heart out there that feels sorry for the people in prison. It is, you know, way bigger than that. This is a discussion, first of all, you said, costing the state money. What do you mean by that? What could happen here with the feds?
If you fail to act and address the concerns raised by the Department of Justice, which I might add is the Trump Department of Justice.
Right.
So it's a Republican DOJ here, and what they've said is, you know, you've got to do X, Y, and Z to improve your conditions, or we're going to take over your system. They take it over, they can force you to spend whatever they want to, and the state has to pay for it. So you have to raise taxes to pay for the expenses they want. And then on the second side, on the release, if you look in California, they released over 45,000 inmates to relieve their overcrowding, and the feds did that because the state ignored their requests.
Unbelievable. That would mean, and the situation right now, when you first started looking into this years ago, and you'll explain how the numbers actually work, I think we were at 193% of capacity of our prison system, if I remember that correctly.
And that's correct. And we've down to about 153% capacity.
Okay, and explain that 100% isn't really 100%. There is a little bit of nuance.
No one in the country is 100%, but for constitutional standards for the courts and so forth, you need to get down to 137%.
Okay. And so we're still...
We've made progress, but we're not as far along as this report showed.
Do they cut you some slack from the feds? If you made that big reduction, you're down to 153%. Can they say, hey, they're heading in the right direction, let them keep working on it before we would come in here?
They'll give you some grace time. If they see you're trying to make a good faith effort, they'll give you some slack on it, but they got to show that you're seriously making efforts. And if you're just paying lip service, they're going to cut your feet out.
And if they do, you mentioned California. Describe to folks back here at home what that looks like. When a federal receivership comes in, you said they made the state raise taxes and pay for what? What did they have to do?
Very similar to where the pre-stages are. They come in and say, we want you to act. Well, their legislature just said, I don't care what you say, we're not doing anything. So the feds took over their system. When they took over their system, they said, we're going to make you have a less crowded system. So one way we're going to do it is we're going to release about 45,000 inmates. Two, we're going to make you spend money on all these services we want you to provide for the rest of your inmates still there. And you're going to do this, and you're going to raise taxes to pay for it. To this date, California has spent several billion dollars forced on them by the federal courts.
Wow.
Because they could have avoided it, and they ignored them.
And that's the same kind of situation that's setting up here. If the feds would come in...
We're there now. They're telling us to do something, so we've got to act. And if we decide to ignore them, then they can come in and just force you to do what they want. And in our situation, since you're at about 21,000 inmates, a reduction to get you to 137% doing the math, you're talking several thousand people being let go.
And
nobody will... That's bad for public safety all the way around.
Yeah, I mean, these are people that wouldn't... I mean, they wouldn't have served their sentence. They would just say, y'all got to turn them out.
Yep, that's it. You're done.
Wow. It's, you know, you've been talking about this. You've been telling folks for years on this. Maybe, you know, it has to get down to crunch time. I mean, the truth is, too, in the legislature, I mean... Senator Ward, I mean, there seems to have been no appetite to deal with this to raise revenue to deal with this or shift money from somewhere else, right?
That's right. That's right.
And it's not that...
You and I have talked about this. This is not one of those... It's kind of like saying that because we're being found in violation of the Eighth Amendment to the Constitution, cruel and unusual punishment. Well, what they say is, we can't... It's like I keep saying this. It's kind of like the Ten Commandments to the Bible. or the Ten Commandments that Moses brought out. Okay, Ten Commandments, you can't say I like seven of the ten, but I don't like these other three. The Bill of Rights is the same way. You can't say I like seven of the Bill of Rights, but I don't like these other three. They're all the same. They're all treated the same. So if we don't follow the Eighth Amendment, you're just violating the U.S. Constitution.
And the measure there, the punishment for it is already a known quantity, talking about California.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the test case. You don't want to be like California. Nobody wants to. We know every time we do anything else in government, we always say, let's don't do what California does. This should be another time we should say, let's don't do what California did.
Are you not getting in the ears of your fellow senators and those folks downstairs in the House?
A lot of colleagues after this latest report have really stepped up and said, ooh, I think you're right. We got to do something.
Welcome to the club.
We got to do something here. And so we're getting a bipartisan group together, both Republicans and Democrats, sitting down and coming up with some ideas that we can present with the U.S. attorneys who came and talked to us and see if we can't get something to keep us out of trouble.
And that's going to, I got to imagine it's not going to come for free. I mean, that's just the way it is.
But there's a way you can get there without being too big of a burden. It's a lot cheaper than if you let them force it on.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And we get the benefit of deciding what the priorities are within the structure, you know, ourselves as Alabamians versus having the federal government tell us what to do. And I definitely think that's the better option. But it isn't going to come at no cost. I mean, if we're going to, because we're not going to release folks, what are we going to do with the people? How are we going to?
No, what you can do is there's certain programming you can do over a period of time. But you just got to show the federal folks, I'm committed to doing this. I'm willing to do this. And we're going to do it and sustain it over a period of time, as opposed to getting hit with it all at once.
Okay. And you think if we present this to the feds and say, here's our, you know, I almost picture it like a report here, where here's our plan, here's year one, here's year two, that's something that might work?
Yep. If you're showing a good faith effort to fix this, they'll give you some slack. But now what they won't tolerate is either just ignoring it altogether or continuing to what we're doing now and just basically ignoring them. That will not be tolerated by them.
You have been hearing that this is imminent, but it seems like now with this, like you pointed out, Trump administration DOJ report that is in so many different places telling us as a state we're in violation. And I want to get into some of it, too. There's the overcrowding issue. But if you look at the report and then you look at the stories about it and the USA Today and so many other stories, it's not just talking about the overcrowding. It's talking about the conditions and the mental health issues and those kind of things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, that's exactly right.
How do we deal with that?
Go ahead.
How do we deal with that? How do we answer that question?
Well, and that's why there's a group of us working together now. It's multifaceted. There's not one bill or one budget appropriation you can do to fix it. You've got to come up with a multi-pronged approach. And I think there are some ideas out there, but it's not one silver bullet that you do this and the whole thing's fixed.
I mean, looking at the, it goes through all the murders and the violence in our prisons. I would point out that probably happens because there's violent people in there. But then it broke down the number. I mean, it was like two at Bibb Correctional, it was like 200. They thought 200 people had knives in the prison out of 1,900. Yeah. I mean, that's a danger for corrections officers.
A large part of that problem there is your lack of staffing and a lack of adequate technology inside the system to monitor so that you're not getting these contraband in, whether it be drugs or weapons, that are used in violence.
Yeah, and cell phones. Lord knows when they had the riot a couple of years ago at Atmore down here, and then, you know, they're doing live stream video from their smartphones from inside the cell block.
That's exactly right. I actually visited that prison right after that happened. And the problem with it is the layout of that facility is such that it's based upon old school warehousing mentality. Just put 400, 500 inmates in one warehouse at one time, and good luck. Well, you don't have enough officers to possibly handle that many bad people in one single space.
So, I mean, what do we do? You said there's different bills, different plans, but addressing them, let's address the biggest elephant in the room, and that is the overcrowding. Is there a way to deal with the overcrowding other than building new structures?
Yeah. Building by itself won't deal with overcrowding. It's part of the solution, but it's not the only solution. It's part of the puzzle, but not the whole thing. Your real way of dealing with this is you're going to have to look at, one, how are you handling your current parole system for nonviolent offenders? That's one. Two, you've got to look at what few nonviolent offenders are left. What are they there for? Is a person who's been convicted of a theft of property being held longer than someone who committed a murder, which I know the case is that they have been, why don't we address that disparity? You don't have to release a bunch of people to make this work, but you got to have a long-term plan of operation so that you can show them that you're planning long-term to keep this down.
Well, we seem to be in a pickle here, and we'll pick this up after the news break, but if we're going to be tough on crime in the state and lock folks up, but we're also at the same kind of same time going to say not another cent for corrections to build extra places to put them.
Yeah, you can't do that either. You're going to spend money on construction. There is no way around that. And I know people don't like it, but if you want the Fed to come take over, just don't do anything.
All right, we'll come back more with State Senator Cam Ward, who has been on this prison task force since the get-go on this and has been talking with us on the show now. I mean, it is bad times are very, very close with this DOJ report. As a state, we got to wake up to this. Some of the options out there, some of the things they're talking about in Montgomery, we'll talk about that with Cam Ward when we return. Also, your text, welcome at 343-0106, 343-0106. Weather update from staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams. I can give you my hayseed version of it. Yo, it's raining out there, and a bunch more rain still off to our west. We'll get the official version with Dr. Bill coming up next, and then back to the show.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Streaming online, fmtalk1065.com. Also, a TuneIn Radio app for your smartphone. And you can catch this interview, like all the other 40-some-odd hours a week of live local programming we do, on our podcast page over at fmtalk1065.com. Turn to our conversation with State Senator Cam Ward, who's always been great about coming on with us over the years and talking about the issues facing prisons and corrections in the state of Alabama. And I say years, Senator Ward, because we've been talking about this same thing for years.
Yes, we have. Yes, unfortunately, we have. And I think this is going to be a real eye-opener for a lot of our members who perhaps ignored this or hope this issue would go away on its own.
Now this a lot of texts coming in here. This texter says, legalize marijuana and immediately release all the nonviolent drug offenders.
In Alabama's prison system today, almost no one is in prison. No one in state prisons for marijuana possession. That almost just never happens. That's an urban legend out there. And actually, due to sentencing reform, we've gotten rid of most of you solely drug possession people in prison. So that's just the real issue today is you have about 86% violent, 14% nonviolent population. It's just there just aren't a whole lot of nonviolent folks left.
And so that's real scary, because if they come in and you said to the actual number of inmates that would have to be released to get us down to 153%, which,
yes,
if y'all didn't catch last segment, that's kind of that's 153% is 100%. So to get us to that number, how many people get turned out?
You would probably have, if they were to do a forced mass release on us, you're talking about 6,000.
Holy cow.
You don't want it. That's not a road. No one, Republican, Democrat, Independent, you don't want that. But you've got to start coming up with long-term plans and solutions, or else that's what's going to be forced on you.
Okay, let's talk about solutions, and let's talk about conservative solutions. As people listen to the show, they said, the Republicans are in charge. What's a conservative solution?
Well, one thing you do is, long-term population-wise, it reduces your numbers. Drop your recidivism rate further. Recidivism is basically when you've been in prison, you come out, and you recommit and go back in. The way you can do that, I passed a bill today in the legislature that said you're going to break down some of the occupational licensure barriers. We have a lot of people who are in prison. They learn a skill. They get out. And what do we want from society? We want them to get a job, pay their taxes, and be law-abiding. But government has set up so many barriers, many of these people can't get a job anywhere. So, of course, they're going to result back to crime. Why not break down the government barrier so these people can find jobs? And when they do that, other states have shown it greatly reduces the number that ever come back into the system.
That's good in the medium term. I guess that keeps them from coming back in and bulking up that population in prison.
Long term, it's shown to really reduce your population because they don't come back.
Okay, so we don't have that return flow, but we do have the people that are in there right now, and we have the DOJ breathing down our neck. And you said you're meeting with the folks with the feds and giving them ideas of what we're going to do. Is building part of it? You said that's not the whole solution,
but building's part of it. But it's not. You can't build your way out of this. Building is part of it. Mainly, if you look at the report, they talk about a lack of technology, a lack of... Well, many of our prisons don't even have good locks on them because the buildings are so old. Stuff like that has to be addressed through new building, but that by itself is not going to be a solution. It's a piece of the puzzle, but not the whole puzzle.
Well, I'm gonna go ahead and ask you this. We've talked about it a couple times, but before somebody asks this question and just says, "Hey, y'all are going soft on them. Why don't you do like Arpaio did out in Arizona? Why don't you put them in tent camps out there? That'll be cheaper."
Yeah, I've looked at that number before too. In fact, when I first started this, someone asked me that. I was like, "Oh, look this up." The sheriff out there, and by the way, who lost multiple lawsuits and was finally convicted of a crime for some of his treatment. What happened there was he was spending. To keep them in a tent facility, he was spending about $56 a day on per inmate. In Alabama, we spend $43 a day per inmate. And the reason his was so much more expensive, if you put them in tents with just a fence, that means you got to hire a whole lot more officers to make sure they stay inside the fence.
Yes.
They're just not as secure.
So the cost is, there's multiple costs, but one of the major costs is personnel, right? It's corrections officers there. And
officers to make sure these people stay in there.
And so you told me, and then I've seen it in a couple other reports, that if you modernize the prisons in Alabama, you could have, fewer corrections officers?
Yeah, you watching. Won't need as many. It's labor-intensive the way the buildings are now. They're very labor-intensive. I mean, they're because of the way they're laid out, I'll give you one down in Atmore. Holman Prison has this enormous warehouse, 400 and something inmates. Well, it requires you to hire a whole lot more officers to keep up with that many inmates in one room. If you had a different kind of facility where you segregated out and didn't have as many inmates in one place, you could monitor a lot with cameras and a lot less human resource power.
Do you think that the something you and I discussed a couple months ago here, that maybe Governor Ivey would use the executive branch to enter into a contract with a private entity to build out prisons?
Let me clarify, though. She's talked about doing that, but not privatizing prisons, which I'm against. But
right, not private. Yeah, we would still be DOT.
I think she's looking at probably contracting in to have someone build a couple prisons, and then we lease it back from them.
Right, so it'd still be Alabama Department of Corrections officers and Alabama Department of Corrections running it, but we would pay a monthly or whatever lease to that company.
And the reason you would do that is you could fund that out of your current budget and not ask for a bond issue or go into debt. That's a much more conservative solution than issuing a big bond issue.
Okay, so and also it gets out of the politics of somebody who has a prison currently in their district who wants to hold on to those jobs.
That's what you get out of the way, because that's created more mess than it did good.
Okay. So is that, I mean, it sounds like these decisions, I mean, there has to be, the plan presented, but we have to start doing some things in our state before long.
The meeting's coming up here. We've got, like I said, a good bipartisan group together working and looking at real hard solutions that we can present and say, hey, will this work? And also at the same time, we're going to be talking with the U.S. attorneys again and asking them, give us some ideas on what you think you'd like to see addressed. What can we do to get to a point we're in a good spot? So it's going to be a dialogue both with here in the legislature back and forth, as well as us and the federal officials.
So, this is something that is not going to be, this is not a can that can be kicked to 2020 session. This is something that is a 2019 issue?
Yeah, we'll start now. But the biggest thing you got to show is through your budget and your regulations inside the prisons that you're making substantial changes. Two, you've got legislation at least introduced that you're moving to deal with some of your other issues. So it doesn't have to pass this session, but you have got to start now, and you've got to show substantial progress being made.
Do we, if people are contacting their local representatives and senators, I mean, what do they need to say, in your opinion? What would you have them say?
I don't want a bunch of people being released, and I don't want the federal government running our prisons and making us spend a lot of money, because that's what's going to happen if we do nothing. So lawmakers, figure out something, but I don't want the federal government taking this over and letting a bunch of people out, and at the same time costing us a lot of money.
Oh, well said. State Senator Cam Ward, thank you for your time. Thanks for your time over the years on this. This is not brand, even though for some people it's a first day of this and brand new talking about it, you've been working on this years and doing a lot of unfun work there when it comes to Alabama prisons.
Hold on one second. Yeah, thank you, Sean.
All right, we'll let you run here. I know y'all are about to go back in the Senate. State Senator Cam Ward joining us right here on Midday Mobile. All right, so there it is. That's what we've been talking about, that for the last few years, this the gorilla in the room is a possibility of federal receivership. And now with this DOJ report, it looks closer than ever. I mean, the DOJ report is scathing. And like Senator Ward said, this is not like an Obama DOJ. This is not, you know, not an Eric Holder here. This is President Trump's DOJ. These are, and they're saying, you gotta do something here. That, y'all, this is not about being, you know what soft on crime is? The feds coming in and telling us we have to open the doors and release all these people. That's what soft on crime is. I've been saying it for years. It doesn't seem to have gotten much traction, but y'all, it is here. The unfortunate package from the DOJ has arrived. All right, so just want you to be aware of that, and hopefully members of the legislature. It's not a fun vote. They don't want to, nobody wants to. They don't want to start working on prison when you can do fun things like lotto. Who wants to do prison? Who wants to talk about that? Yeah, nobody does. But it's what they have to do. It's the heavy lift, and it's what is facing our state. All right, we'll keep our eyes on it like we have been for years here and let you know when more information comes out on that. All right, coming back from the break, we'll talk to Scott Bannon, Director of Alabama Marine Resources, as a new piece of information has come from the feds today, this one dealing with red snapper season and the ability for states to manage the season themselves. What is the, you know, what does the state have to say? What do we get to decide? What do the feds get to decide? Gulf Marine Council put out a memo about that today. I put it up on our Twitter feed and on our Facebook pages for the Outdoor Show and for FM Talk 106.5, so you can check it out there. And those details are waiting for you, and then we'll talk about this with Scott Bannon coming up in just a couple minutes. All right, 1243 FM Talk 106.5, and we'll be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you all along. And as I mentioned, we'll check in with Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon. Just one second. I do need to give you a heads up. Going on tonight, another great event, actually double event going on at Cottage Hill Package. As starting up at 6 tonight, Pretoria Brewery there with sampling for their different brews, like their Scholey IPA, their Walker's Station Stout, also their Rye Charles Rye IPA. And also, if you're into that low-calorie adult beverages, the Truly Spiked and Sparkling Water, one of the hottest brands of sparkling seltzer on the market, that's going to be there. Folks from Boston Beer Company up front at Cottage Hill Package, giving you samples of several different flavors for free. And then tomorrow night, what a great combo, local and local. Folks from Serta Brewing Company will be out at Cottage Hill Package, locally owned company as well. Russ and the crew from Serta Brewing is going to be in the back with some of their delicious new beers, like their Jubilator Helles Doppelbach, also their Clear Prop Porter, their Homeport Hefeweizen, and their barley wine that spent a little time in some bourbon barrels, including an Elijah Craig barrel donated by Cottage Hill Package. It's cool stuff. That's tonight from 6 to 8, and tomorrow night starting at 6, all at Cottage Hill Package, corner of Cottage Hill and Hillcrest. Online, cottagehillpackage.com, and check them out. Make sure to like them over on Facebook. All right, joined by Director of Marine Resources for the state of Alabama and a guest and a buddy, Scott Bannon. Hey.
Hey, Sean. How are you today?
Doing good. I was looking at a report came out a little bit earlier today from the Gulf of Mexico Fishery Management Council saying the Gulf Council votes to allow state management of recreational red snapper for private anglers. So when I got a question about what this all means, I pick up the phone and call you. So what does it all mean?
Well, it means that the states are getting what they ask. The five Gulf states have asked to be able to manage the private angling red snapper fishery at the state level, where we get to set the season and the bag limit and potentially the size limit as well. And it took a lot of coordination between all five states and some concerns with the federal government, and the council unanimously approved it today. So that's just the first step in the process. It still has to go to the Secretary of Commerce to be approved, and there are some public meetings that have to be held. But at the end of the day, for the 2020 red snapper fishing season, all five Gulf states should have the ability to manage the season at whatever level they want. If they want to change the bag limits, set the season dates, and change the size limits, they can.
Is this codifying what we've been working under? I mean, is this just making the system y'all have had now the law, or will there be any change?
It's slightly different. So 2018 and 2019 have been under an exempted fishing permit, an EFP, which was issued by the federal government to say that we're giving you an exemption from the rules, which was just the season date. So we were allowed to set the season, but we could not change the minimum size limit or the bag limit. So we've been delegated the authority to make those changes, bag limit changes, seasons, and you could also change the minimum size and add a maximum size if you would wanted to. If your state wanted that as a management tool, it would be available to you.
Okay, let's walk through that, because that's that's something that's different there. Okay, the modifying, the delegate the authority for establishing or modifying the bag limit. So the bag limit right now is two fish. Would you move to change that? And I guess we need to go back to, after you answer that, and talk about how this whole game is played, right? I mean, there's still the allotment, the tonnage that we're allowed. So, I mean, would you push to change from two fish to something else?
That's a difficult decision, to be honest with you, because we are still provided the amount of fish that we're allowed to fish from the federal government, and so we get our allocation. So there's a percentage that's in this amendment that has been divvied to the state of Alabama. And then, so it's our responsibility to manage that percentage. So what we will do is we'll look at what are the benefits, what are the pros and cons to making some of the different changes. Can you provide more days and more opportunities to fish? Can you maintain the stock at certain harvest rates? And there's a lot of information that really has to be considered when you look at making any of these other changes.
Yeah, okay, I guess, and you can correct me here on the edges if I'm wrong, but the analogy I give to people who don't fish in the Gulf like we do is, let's take we get a big trough of water, that's our allocated tonnage by the feds, and, you know, depending on how many buckets we take out of it a day and how big those buckets are, that's how we end up getting to the bottom of that bigger tank, right? I mean, that's what you're trying to do, is decide how you can get the most days for anglers.
You have a certain amount of pounds, and then how many pounds do you want to take out per day, and you can do it by adjusting the numbers of fish, you can do it by adjusting the size of the fish, you can stick with what we have, which has been fairly reasonable plan and provided a fair amount of days, but we'll play through multiple scenarios. I would look for us to be pretty conservative in the first year of this. We still want to make sure that we're managing very responsibly. The federal government will always have the opportunity to withdraw that if we are not meeting the standards of not exceeding our allocation. There is a payback provision where you would have to pay it back the next year, so that helps to keep that in check. But our goal is to manage it very closely, that we don't overfish, and that will provide maximum opportunities for Alabama's anglers.
Okay, I mean, like, the simple math, as I'm trying to explain it to folks who don't do it, the simple math of this would be, and now I know there's a lot of nuance here and weather and fishing days and participation, but if you went from two fish limit where we are now and set a four fish limit, wouldn't that, in just very basic terms, give us half the days on the water?
Yes. Basic theory, that's what would happen. Depending on the size of the fish that they're catching those days that it's open. If the weather's bad and people are just grabbing the first couple of fish they can get to, they catch smaller fish, it's still based on the pounds. So it's not a direct correlation, but in basic math, that would be relatively true.
Well, but people have to assume, there's an assumption that the average snapper is a certain size. Is that correct?
That's correct. And that's based on our staff surveys at the boat ramps, and it changes every year, based on what the anglers are bringing to the dock at the public access boat ramps and the marinas, places where boats are stored.
It kind of loads a gun for Gulf anglers to shoot ourselves in the foot, and not to get in too much detail, we will on upcoming Outdoors, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoor Show when we talk about it, but the fact is anglers only get two snapper, therefore we tend to high grade to the two really big snapper we can find for each limit, therefore the average size of the fish goes up, therefore the number of days comes down.
That's correct. there's a slightly more to it, but that is a great basic view of it, and it's true. I will always express my concern with managing to a number of pounds instead of to a number of fish. I think they're distinctly different. My goal is that down the road we may get to where the state manages the amount of fish that can be harvested in the Alabama Reef Zone, so that kind of the next step down the road, and all of this takes time. It's you have to be very careful about how these things are laid out. It's taken about 3 years to get to the state management from the first time it was proposed.
I know you've been working on this, you and your crew, a long time, and this has been an uphill climb and a slog. So it's good that we're getting a little bit of some recognition here in this program. So it says here it gives you the authority as a state to, with the private angling component of recreational red snapper fishing, gives you the right to modify bag limit, minimum size limit, maximum size limit. Would there be any reason to put a slot in or a top end on snapper?
There has been some discussion from different groups that hey, if you put a slot limit in place, then you kind of artificially set the amount of pounds that a person would bring in per day. So it is an opportunity that's available to us, and whether or not we would utilize that, but it also could lead to some higher dead discard.
Big time, yeah.
That's a problem, too.
Yeah, that is. And we've got a situation where we have so many big snapper out there, I'd be scared about how many we'd have to turn back, that wouldn't make it back onto the reef. All right, I also see in this memo that went out the breakdown of percentages of the distribution of the tonnage, right? And it kind of runs down state by state in the Gulf. Who gets what? We get 26.298%. You happy with that?
Yes, I think that's a pretty reasonable allocation for the state of Alabama. Remember, we have 3% of the shoreline of the Gulf of Mexico, and we're getting almost 27% or just over 26% of the total allowable catch for the entire Gulf. Our neighbor to the east of us, Florida, they get the bigger chunk, but they are a much, much bigger state, have much bigger coastline, have many more people. But we are the red snapper capital of the Gulf, and so people like to come here. It has been a fish that we put a lot of emphasis on. We've done a lot of work to create reef fish habitat. So I think at the end of the day, it's a reasonable amount for the state of Alabama. I think all of the states came out in the discussions with a fair amount of fish that works well for their state.
Well, I mean, I want to point out and I come back to the neighbor to the east, and we'll talk about that on a future show, because, how much of the Florida coastline is actually a place where you catch red snapper. But put it in comparison, y'all, we get, like Director Bannon said, almost 27%. Mississippi gets 3.5%. Texas 6.2%, and Louisiana 19.1%. So compared to those other three states, it seems reasonable to me.
It is, and then we manage it utilizing snapper check very tightly. So I'm going to try and give you the maximum number of fish that we can, and that's why snapper check is so important and reporting is so important, that the more real numbers, the better that number is, the more days that you will get. And we have a 10% buffer in there, and that's to prevent any overruns and things. But our goal is that we want right up to that 10% every time. We were over slightly last year. If we would have closed half a day early, we would have not been over by the 2,000 pounds, which was 0.2%. But that's how tightly we can manage it utilizing the snapper check program.
All right. So with all that being said, what does that mean for snapper season 2019? You had released some of the information before. Can you go back through that, seasons, days, those kind of things?
Sure. The 2019 season is still going to be under the exempted fishing permit. So we are limited to the 2 per person, and the 16-inch total length is the minimum size. We're going to run June 1st through the last weekend in July, and we're going to do 3-day weekends. Now, the weekend of June 1st is only going to be a 2-day weekend, because that's the 1st and 2nd. And we're going to include the 4th of July, which is a Thursday. So you get Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, except for the 4th of July, that Thursday, you'll get that. And toward the end of the season, if it looks like we will still have fish remaining, based on the landings and the size fish and the other factors, we can make some decisions. Do we add more days to August, or do we wait and do like a Labor Day weekend? It provides us some options, and that's the benefit of the flexibility of the state program.
All right, well, we'll be watching this and talking about with you coming up soon, more in detail, because there's a whole bunch else to this. Scott, as always, we appreciate your time.
No problem. Thank you for the opportunity.
All right. Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, joining us right here on FM Talk 106.5 in Midday Mobile. All right. Coming right back.